our NFL insider. Good morning, Jason. Good to have you. Great day of football yesterday. What took place in Seattle was, unless you're a Texans fan, unless you're Bill O'Brien, it was awesome. I don't have a rooting interest, so just to sit back and watch these two teams go at each other. The defense, you know, may want to tighten up, but if you love high-scoring football, what a game.
Yeah, that was about as much fun as it gets just from a neutral observing standpoint. And it's what the league has lacked. I mean, so many of these games, unless it's, you know, your hometown team or you got a ton of fantasy players in the game or you have a wager, legal or otherwise, on the game, it's just it's tough sledding, tough to watch. And, I mean, the 9:30 a.m. game was a disaster. The London games always are. Well, I guess it was 7:30 for you guys.
Yeah.
The 11 a.m. kickoff for you guys were, I mean, most of those halftime scores were 7-0, 10-10, 14-3. I mean, it was the usual offensive sort of paralysis. And then, thankfully, the 30% of this country who got to see that Houston-Seattle game were rewarded for sticking with it, because that's as much fun as it gets. And really was... almost reminded me of like a trick shot video or like some of those old McDonald's commercials with like Larry Bird and like Magic yeah. Johnson, and you make this crazy shot and then I'll make that crazy shot and then you make that and whoever's got the ball last wins. And, you know, those two quarterbacks, that's truly special. I mean, that's getting bang for your buck. I mean, you bought a ticket to that game, you feel like you saw something special. You sat on your couch for 3.5 hours or 3 hours or whatever and watched that. You're like, you know what, that was worth it. Special players making special plays from really the first drive to the last. And, yeah, it was great. I mean, yeah, both secondaries not feeling real good right now. There'll be a lot of tape review defensively that will cause some consternation, particularly for Seattle, because that's their forte. I mean, let's face it, the Texans have lost Watt. They've lost Merciless. They lost their best corner, A.J. Bouye, to Jacksonville in free agency. You know, they've got Clowney running around there on sort of half a leg. So, yeah, they're going to give up some points. But to see Watson shred that Seattle defense, albeit lacking, Michael Bennett at his best, but still... yeah, there's a tour de force performance. Watson is a lot of fun. I'm very glad we have him in the AFC for CBS. And if he keeps this up, you know, I think the Texans become sort of a national team that, you know, their people are going to want to watch them because they want to see what this kid can do any given week. And we haven't had that happen. You know, Winston has not transformed the Bucs. Mariota has not transformed the Titans. Carr looked like he was going to transform the Raiders. And they've regressed. So thank God for Wentz. Thank God for Watson.
The Eagles win again. They handily defeat San Francisco. Between Wentz and the Eagles, plus what we're hearing now, you can shed light, I'm sure, the rumor that they're after Calvin Johnson, the retired receiver from Detroit.
Yeah. I'm told fake news.
So all right.
Texting people in their front office. Now, they have a lot of coals in the fire, or irons in the fire, or irons in the coals, whatever that... pathetic cliche is.
We gotcha.
They got a lot of that going on. Their GM, Howie Roseman, super aggressive and very proactive. And even last year when they weren't nearly this good of a team and had probably, you know, minimal, sparse playoff hopes, he was trying to trade for Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith at that point. Now, he got them both eventually in free agency, but they'd love to add another receiver for Carson Wentz, a real veteran presence. But I think it would be more likely to be perhaps a Larry Fitzgerald, or maybe they call down to Miami where that offense is broke and say, hey, are you really going to pay Jarvis Landry? What if we had Landry and Aguilar in the slot, plus Ertz, who we could put out wide, or in the slot? Something to take them over the top, and they're very much looking at tackles as well. Whether it's Cordy Glenn or Dwayne Brown, Joe Staley is someone they had a lot of interest in, but you know he has a fracture around his orbital bone, and I don't know that somebody's going to trade for him now given an injury of that sort of magnitude or that potential magnitude. But, yeah, the Eagles are active, but the idea that you're going to trade for the rights to Calvin Johnson and, you know, he's going to get himself, the Lions are going to get cap compliant and they're going to resolve those retiring, unretiring issues with the management council and then you're going to be able to figure out the cap ramifications on your end and what you're going to have to pay him for this year, and does he just want to come back for this year, or are you trying to have him, get him for multiple years? I haven't heard any GM in the league tell me they think that's feasible.
What's Bob McNair doing? That's a silly comment, isn't it, especially timing-wise?
I mean, whether you think it's in, you know, quasi-private or not, the reality is you said that in a room that had, you know, conservatively 75 people in it. You know, two representatives from each team, that's 64, at least 8 to 10 to 12 people from the league office, depending on who may or may not have been drifting in or out at that particular time. And you know, I'm told he did apologize to Troy Vincent and some others, you know, during that meeting when some objection was raised. But and then it takes two separate statements, you know, to try to clarify what he's trying to say in terms of the team's public statements about it. And then on Friday, it's the coach and the GM trying to clean up the mess, but the owner didn't meet with anybody until Saturday morning. Like, they botched it all the way around. And had he come out, you know, on Friday and fallen on the sword, and if he's trying to say it was about the league office, then you should have said that in your initial statement on Friday. And had he dropped everything he was doing and gone into the facility then and canceled practice and said, I'm going to handle this individually, I'll stay here till midnight, you know, I'll stay here as long as it takes to meet individually with every player or coach who has an issue with this and try to explain. Like, there's ways to do it. But having them try to clean up the mess and putting out two sort of incongruous statements and then going in on Saturday, but you didn't really plan to fly with the team anyway, so you meet with the guys before they fly to Seattle. You heard the comments in the locker. I mean, it ain't over. I mean, when Dwayne Brown and DeAndre Hopkins are basically saying what they said, or in Hopkins' case, what they didn't say, which is anything positive about the owner, then, you know, there's still some guys who are angered by it. Now, they played their butts off, and it's not why they lost that game, but I also don't think it's going away. You know, I think it's going to be something that McNair is going to have to continue to address, and he better set up some sort of foundation or some sort of fund towards, okay, what am I actually tangibly going to do now to, you know, embrace the idea of sensitivity and diversity and, you know, not giving the impression that this is what I think of my employees.
Jason Lackenfor, our guest, our NFL insider. Scary scene yesterday as Zach Miller of the Bears makes what looks to be a touchdown catch, probably was a touchdown catch, bobbles it. But what's important is his leg snaps underneath him, a gruesome-looking injury. And it sounds, we see a lot of gruesome injuries. It happens. It's football. But it sounds like it was more severe than we could have imagined. What's the update on Zach Miller?
Yeah, I mean, there's very real fear about that leg and the nerves and the ligaments around that knee and the ability to sort of function regularly outside of any football capacity. But just, you know, having him basically saving that leg. And he's been in surgery, and I've communicated with his agent a little bit, and everyone's kind of trying to, you know, just pray for him, really, at this point. I had heard last night that given the way that injury occurred, and again, with some of the nerves and some of the arteries around that knee, that it was career threatening, that immediately nobody was talking about Zach Miller playing football for a long, long time or maybe ever again. And then obviously now it's reached a point where there's some concern just again about saving that leg and about having, you know, that leg being fully functional for Zach Miller moving forward. But I you know, I would say, look, it's still early. There's been no official pronouncement from the doctors or from the team. And, you know, we see a lot of miracles and a lot of amazing things happen in science and medicine and surgery all the time. So, you know, at this point, it's still an ongoing situation. And hopefully at some point today or tomorrow, certainly this week, you know, the Bears will provide some further clarity about exactly what the prognosis is for him moving forward. But a gruesome injury, it looked like unnatural. You know what I mean? Just the way it happened and the original twist, and then as he rolled over and the way that leg just, you know, it was almost like dead weight. It was like, okay, gravity's just pulling that leg down, and he can't control it in any capacity. It's obviously a serious situation.
Oof. I'm showing Red a picture, a still photo of it right now. You're right. It looks like it doesn't look like something that is real life.
No.
Are you going to ask your Bills question?
I wasn't going to ask about the Bills because I'm sick of asking about the Bills because they look so. I was going to ask about the Monday Nighter, Broncos Chiefs. Both teams have looked pretty good at times this year. What are we going to have tonight?
Yeah. You know, Chiefs kind of have to get off the mat now. They lost twice in 5 days. They've had an extended break since then. In the meantime, they've seen Houston, and they've seen Pittsburgh and New England both pretty much jump right up to the head of the class in the AFC and say, hey, not so fast for that first overall seed. Denver obviously has had trouble scoring. Trevor Siemian's in a funk. The entire offense is in a funk. And all of a sudden, Paxton Lynch is practicing again. And remember, he was a first-round pick. It was not a novelty. That's someone who John Elway had christened himself as the heir apparent, the next one. And it hasn't looked good in the very brief times he's played, and he had a rough preseason before he got hurt. But if this offense doesn't pick up in the next couple of weeks, then I think Paxton Lynch will get an opportunity to try to lead the offense and provide a different sort of physicality and athleticism and mobility to what they do. I mean, if Denver loses, then you know, it starts looking pretty dire there. So, it should be an interesting game. I mean, Alex Smith has looked like an MVP at times this year. We know the Chiefs can score quickly and score in bunches the way they've reinvented themselves. But the defense has slipped the last few weeks as well. And the linebackers aren't particularly fast. And Marcus Peters is not having a great season. And Justin Houston's been the only guy to provide the pass rush. So we'll see. You know, is this a game that Von Miller takes over? Does Denver's defense singularly rise up and suffocate the Chiefs? If they don't, if Kansas City scores into the mid-20s, I don't know that Denver can match that based on what we've seen of them, you know, the last 3-4 weeks, and especially given some of the injuries they've suffered to their offensive line. Maybe this is a game where Dee Ford or somebody else besides Justin Houston has some joy getting to the quarterback.